Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach, and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. So I am delighted to welcome the wonderful Narissa Golden to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. But before we get into Narissa, can I just say one thing? I love your name, Golden. Every time I hear it, I start breaking into Jill Scott's. Golden, living a life like it's golden, living. I can't sing, but anyway, so.
That's our family anthem.
So I just love it. So I was going to ask you a question, which wasn't on the thing on the things we're going to talk about. That is your actual family name, or is it just your creative name?
No, it's actually the name of my ex-husband.
Okay.
And I took the name along with the children.
Ah, fabulous.
Because basically my career had actually kind of kicked off after we got married professionally. Okay. So everybody knows me as that.
Okay.
Greenaway is my family name. Also proud of that one as well.
Excellent.
So it's either green or gold.
Okay. But I'm living life like it's golden. So Narissa, tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you come from. Not many people would probably know about Montserrat. So tell us a little bit more about where you come from.
All right. So my family, my mom's originally from Antigua. My father is Munstrashen, but we left here when I was really young. So I've only been back to Munstrat in the last, I think it's going on 9 years now. It's longer than I expected to stay. But it's a beautiful little island in the Caribbean that's had a few tragedies. But we're overcoming it. And it's just a wonderful place to raise my family. And I love the opportunities that I've had here. Really, I've come home to Montreal and yet I've seen the world.
And
that's one of the beautiful things about following your heart.
Yes.
So that's really my background. I came home because I wanted a fresh start with my four children. And it's really been that for us. And it's just given me lots of opportunities. It's a really great place to dream and create stuff, and because it's nice and small,
yes,
you do get lots of opportunity to meet people, connect with people if you want to, but also just to experiment and really discover who you are.
Excellent. I mean, I have a little bit of affinity with Montserrat, having worked there for a number of years. So I totally agree with you that for me, I always call it the land that if you want to get away from everything, that's where you go. It's so green, it's so lush, it's so quiet. And it's I kind of nicknamed it the time that land forgot, because it is that kind of almost untouched and unspoiled. But I have a great love for Montserrat. And like yourself, I have Antiguan parentage. My mother's Antiguan. So what drew you back to Montserrat? You said you came with the children and stuff like that. But why Montserrat? If you could go anywhere in the world, why Montserrat?
While I was married, we lived here briefly. My son was actually born here when I lived here in 2003. And we'd come back. We stayed probably about a year and a half. And when we left, because things weren't going well for my ex-husband at the time, my husband at the time, and he wanted to leave, I felt very strongly I was to stay, but I followed, and we went to the UK for a while. And within 9 months, we were back out of there, and I'd finally gotten a clue that, you know, I needed to get out of this marriage. So I moved back to St. Martin, where my family now lives, and had my fourth child. And then it just took a while to get back to Montserrat, but I've always known it was somewhere I wanted to be. And literally, I had to watch my life fall apart in every single way, including my reputation and all of those sorts of things. And so Montserrat was a chance just to start over in a place where, you know what? I pretty much just told my dad, I have nothing now. I have no job. I have no house, no nothing, just my kids.
Yeah.
And they can't kick me out of Montserrat because I'm Montserratian. So there's no other place on the planet that I felt I wanted to be. And in fact, I think God, just through a series of dreams, just kept showing me I was to be there. And I didn't, right. I didn't know how or what. But then the right job opened up. And I actually moved home before I even knew if I was gotten the job or didn't have any interviews or anything. I just took a big faith move and just took my kids and came, and I haven't regretted it.
Excellent, excellent. So you're a writer, and you're also involved in media. But what have been the key motivators for your career choice?
Oof, I was really trying to think about that when I saw the questions, and for me, I've always, I remember as a little girl reading books and knowing I wanted to write books and I wanted to see my name on the cover.
Okay.
So I always knew I wanted to be a writer. I remember the first thing I ever got published was actually a play about emancipation when I was about 7 or 8, when we were living in Virgin Islands. So it's been something that's in me. And I mean, I'd pick up a piece of paper and I'd see something and it'd be funny and the right words would come. Or I remember once writing the first book I published, I would say, was this, it was like a hand-drawn book that I gave to my elder sister because she had this job. And you know, it's Christmas and there's this gift exchange.
Yes.
And so the person had bought her a bouquet of plastic flowers as her gift. So my family, we just teased her nonstop about it. But then I sat down and put together this hilarious book about how to take care of plastic flowers. Wow. And so I realized I had a gift of being able to put words together and have impact, whether just to encourage, to make someone laugh. And it just was always my thing. I wanted to be on television as well. So I worked in television for a while in St. Martin before I went off and got my degree in communications. So communicating, connecting with people, it's just always been, you know, what I love to do.
So writing. Now, I have a secret confession. I've started writing. I'll say writing in italics because sometimes I feel maybe a little bit like a fraud. But what I found is I found it a very cathartic process of literally just writing down my thoughts. And I've taken to whipping out my phone. I don't have pen and paper, just to jot notes down and things that kind of spark my interest. How do you get inspired to write whole novels?
Life inspires me. I get an idea out of a conversation. Again in St. Martin, I was got on the bus, and there's a man that walked on the bus with dreadlocks and holding a little girl's hand. I still see him in my head. It was like, I need to put him in a book. I haven't done that yet. So people inspire me. I love being in airports and people watch and, you know, trying to see how people engage. Yeah. And you wonder, are they in love? Are they mad? I get ideas from life. And it's just to follow through on that. And what you're doing by picking up a piece of paper or recording when you feel something, that's your way of honoring your words. I think there are lots of people who aspire to write and write some grand novel.
Yeah.
But we won't even take the time to write down a thank you, you know?
It's true.
So I tell people, especially who tell me they're struggling with writing. Writing starts with one word. And it's to sit down, and sometimes if that's the only thing you got is that one word, you start with that. And the one word will turn into two. It will turn into a sentence. It'll turn into a paragraph. You know, so if you set miniature goals for yourself, you can then build it up to the novel. But it really is hard to write a grand novel when you're not even comfortable filling half a page. And that's something I've had to learn too as well, because I do want to write the grand novel.
Yeah.
But it doesn't all come spilling out at one time. It actually takes months, years sometimes to do that.
Yeah. So Narissa, what's the most satisfying challenge you've overcome?
I'm going to have to say it would be publishing my first two novels in 2017. Okay. Those were my sixth and seventh books, but they were the first time I was actually writing the novel, the stories I wanted to write for me.
It wasn't whether
somebody wanted to read it or anything. They were just stories in my head that I wanted to tell. My first few books were more autobiographical, also kind of a self-help guides, because I felt I needed to save the world. So I was sharing all this other positive info and stuff or business tips. But aside from the children's poetry book, this was the first time I was actually just writing purely for the joy of wanting to take a story idea to the next. And I got two of them done last year.
Wow. So you're definitely feeling inspired at that point.
Definitely. It was tough, though, because for a while there, I thought I wasn't going to make it through to book two. But again, it was about learning how I work, learning how to evolve as I'm writing, because to write really authentically also means I have to be honest with myself. And there are romance novels as well, so that means I had to now have some discussions with me about relationships and all of those things, and looking at how the stories needed to be today versus the romance novels I might have read when I was a teenager and how women need to be positioned differently for a different outcome.
Okay. So just digress a little bit from that. You talk about how women need to be positioned differently. Can you expand on that? You know, because obviously we've very topical now. We've got like the Me Too movement, and, you know, I've been thinking about some of the things that were probably acceptable back maybe 5 or 10 years ago are kind of no longer acceptable now, but there's a kind of like a, I don't know, maybe a gray line or a fine line between the two. How do you expand about how women need to be positioned now compared to then?
I definitely think first of all, one of the things that's become very blurred, especially for Caribbean people, is what is our Caribbean story versus the story of America and the rest of the world. A lot of us, and I tell my kids this, I said, you are absolutely comfortable walking into the class and seeing a black teacher, knowing your principal is black, seeing all the police officers black, the leader of your government black or female, your doctor is black, female. Those things are absolutely normal to us. But if they look at television and the things that they're consuming, it's telling them a different story about how the world looks. And it's really not true, because it's not their world. So I think a lot of us have forgotten. And it's why I think it's important for us to tell stories, because our young people don't really know that it's absolutely normal. And it's been normal for a long time to have women in leadership. Women as head of a bank, head of a tech company, you know, you had Dame Eugenia Childs, you know, being prime minister of Dominica back in the 80s.
Yes, it's true.
So it is absolutely normal. So for what we have to do now is help our women to see that the version of the life that they're often seeing in the media isn't what is common for Caribbean people.
Yeah.
But it also, so it means that we have to be, just think differently. So the perspective of me wanting that job is because I want that job. It's not because I think I'm a woman, I should have that job.
Yes.
Or because you need to give me an opportunity, or because you're always putting us down and blah, blah, blah. That's not the version of the life I've had. As I was reading the questions you were asking me, I realized I have always known what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I never felt, I don't remember my parents ever telling me, you know, you need to go and get a normal job or whatever normal is.
I just
always felt like whatever I wanted to do, it was well within my rights to do it. It was about, could I afford to do it now, or would I have to wait, or, you know, those different things. But I've never once felt resistance to, oh, you can't do this, do that. And I think we need to continue to give our men and women the opportunity just to see that this is the world that we do live in, and just to step up to the plate and to position ourselves financially to be able to take more advantage of what's available to us.
Definitely, definitely. So, Nerissa, has there been a time where you've maybe confronted a challenge and it's gone wrong? You know, it's gone horribly wrong. So how do you cope with such a situation and gain your comfort and gain your confidence when it gets particularly tough?
I was trying to think what the only thing I could think of really on that level would be my marriage, because like, I'm a preacher's kid and we grew up where, you know, marriage is forever.
Yeah.
And I remember very early in the relationship knowing I needed to get out of it.
Right.
And there were always these open doors that God provided for me, but I never took them. And right. Every time I stayed, they got harder.
Yeah.
And every time I stayed, I had one more baby.
Yeah.
And so I remember that last time after we were living in the UK and recognizing I'm about to have another child, but I don't want to bring my child into this relationship.
Yeah.
How do I get out of it? Because now I'm in the UK, I'm not working. And it was a really tough spot because I felt like I didn't have any power at that point. Because there were the children.
Yeah.
There was the weather was just I couldn't get comfortable with it at that time. And it was just, and then it was also scary being at home because he was abusive.
Yeah.
And so it was getting to the place of just being humble enough to say, hey, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And being willing to reach out and ask for help. I definitely prayed more than ever. And actually just almost prayed my way out of the situation as I looked for solutions.
Yeah.
So regaining my confidence actually came from stepping out, coming home, coming up with the money to get home.
Yes.
At the time I was doing web design.
Right.
And I got an opportunity that I'd bid for like a year before. God just opened the door and it came through and it provided enough money for me to buy our tickets home. And that kind of begun the relationship with me again of recognizing I did have the capacity to earn my own way and to resolve situations that I was in.
Yeah.
And then basically just asking for help, saying, I am in trouble. Can I, at the time it was my dad and I didn't want to hear him say, I told you so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I give you kudos for that. I give you kudos for that because I had a similar experience with my first marriage, but I don't think I had the courage or the confidence to speak up. So I think a lot had to happen. For me, it was being abandoned. That was my get out. You know, so, and I'm working with women now about giving them the confidence and the self-esteem. So it really robs you of that. And it's only kind of recently, after 20 odd years, that I've actually felt comfortable actually having that dialogue. So I have to just reach out and say, you know, thank you for sharing that, because we struggle so much with it as women. And just statistically, we know that a lot more women are in those kind of situations, but for whatever reason, be it guilt, shame, embarrassment, they don't say anything. I'll be honest, I don't think I ever told my mother what was going on. That's not to say she probably didn't guess, but I don't know if I could have had the courage to tell my mother. She would have killed him. Do you know what I mean? And I always thought to myself, or a sibling, that I wouldn't be in the position where one of my members of family would go to jail or prison, you know, because this individual. So I kept it to myself. So again, kudos to you. So let's bring it back up, Nerissa. If you could go back and change one thing, what would it be and why?
I can't think of anything, because every single situation has allowed me to know something about myself.
Right. Okay.
So even if it did not work out well, I now know, okay, that doesn't work, but it doesn't kill you either.
Yes.
You can actually come back from that. So I really couldn't change anything. Like I said, I could have left my marriage earlier, but if I look back and figure, okay, which child would I want to be without
yes.
now?
Yes.
I can't. Because they are all so awesome. So even that situation, I've learned to just be thankful that I made it out. And that my children are here as the blessings that came with that. So I really do my best not to live with regret. Not to say I don't have any. Yeah. But I think I've come to the point where I'm all right with the fact that I'm not perfect and I did not get it right. Although I wish I had sometimes.
So one of the questions I was going to ask you, though, you just said we're not perfect. So how do you deal with your imperfections?
Well, you know what? When you have four children like I have who are free to tell you, they feel very comfortable telling you, saying, "Mommy, you ain't got it together there." you have to deal with that really easily. And they are my mirrors. So when I see they have an issue, I recognize it's usually reflecting me, something that they're doing. Yeah. So how I'm dealing with my imperfections now is seeing it as me overcoming this is going to help them be a better person.
Right.
Because so much of who they are, I'm their biggest influence still on, you know, probably for another couple of months, if not years. And so I have to get my act together because they're there and they're feeding off of me both physically, emotionally, in every way. My friends will tell me, yes, I'm definitely too hard on myself. So I am learning to love Nerissa a little bit more, to be a little bit more patient with her. One of the things that last year also showed me was that I haven't stopped to smell the roses.
Yeah.
I hadn't recognized that even in the eight to nine years that we'd been living here, that we'd overcome a lot. You know, my eldest daughter was now graduating from high school, and I felt totally out of the loop. I'm like, oh my gosh, when did this happen? You know? Yeah. She's gone through whole secondary school in this time. I've got two others about to do the same thing. And it's like, ooh, wait, okay. And it was to pause and to say, all right, you did good.
Yeah.
You did good. Yes, we know there's more to do, but in this moment, you did really good. They're here. They're alive. And you're going to just continue to do well.
Yeah.
So it's to stop and do that.
And I think as well, as women, one thing we don't do, because you said we get caught up and everything just happens, is that we don't take time to stop and celebrate our victories. And I think it's the second conversation I've had in as many weeks about actually just take 5 minutes, look back, reflect, take some time out, pat yourself on the back. You know, Nerissa, you've raised four beautiful kids. You know, so it's they're all triumphs and to be celebrated.
Yeah, we do. We need to do that.
Yes.
And we don't need anybody's permission to do that either, you know. And again, part of that is, and I wouldn't say it's just, it's cultural as well. I know there are women all over the world who have the same issues, but also culturally, we kind of have been raised to be, you know, you're just supposed to do it. It's just what you do.
Yeah.
So you don't get a medal for being a mother.
Yeah.
That's just your job. So why do you stop to celebrate that you know you did not kill any children today? Yeah, you should.
Because nobody gave us the manual. Nobody told us how to do it. Nobody told us what the future was going to end up looking like. And we've come through it victoriously at the other end. So yes,
absolutely,
we deserve it. We bloody well deserve it.
Absolutely.
So Nerissa, many of us are known for self-sabotaging, maybe undermining our own abilities. How do you navigate confidence issues and get out of the vicious circle?
I had to learn to honor my voice and honor my instincts. I've always had very good instincts, but especially after going through the marriage and actually just getting beaten down emotionally, especially, I wasn't very confident and I didn't trust myself and what I wanted. So it's been learning to value me and what I feel and to say, you know what, Janice, I know I can do this thing that you want, but no, I'm not going to do it. It's learning, and then that's okay, rather than thinking, because I like Janice is my friend, Janice could probably lead me to something else, I should say yes. But it's to say no at this point, I don't. I don't want to do that and be okay with that. There are also instances when where I found that fear was the driving force why I was turning down opportunities. Yeah. So it really has been about taking the time to look at myself and say, why are you saying no here? Why are you saying no here? Which one do you really want to say yes to and why? You know, and to recognize when I'm allowing fear or an old memory, maybe because last year when I tried it, it didn't work. So I figure I shouldn't do it again.
Yes.
Is why, you know, I'm acting this way. So it's been spending more time with myself, evaluating why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you thinking the way you're thinking? And what do you need to do differently?
And it's also understanding the values. What are the values that we hold dear to us? And if it's not working for us, we need to walk away and let somebody else step up and do what, you know, they're probably the right person for whatever that issue is or that job. And that it's just not for us at this point in time to when we're ready.
Yes.
So, Narissa, do you have a success quote or mantra that you use? And tell me why it's meaningful for you.
I think I've got a couple. One that that came to me quite a few years ago, and now everybody says it, you know, is feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, again, fear has been this thing that's followed me all through. And I guess it's human.
Yes.
You know? I learned that because I was afraid, it did not mean I have to give in to the fear. I could actually overcome it. Fear could be a sign to be cautious.
Yeah.
It could be a sign for not today.
Yeah.
But if I could see the outcome and recognize the outcome would be for good to just go ahead anyway. And then also over time you recognize you might be afraid doing it alone. So maybe you just need to take two buddies with you, you know, who can believe in you and push you along. I think a lot of times I was afraid because I really thought I was in it alone.
Yes.
Versus
how
my life is now, where there's so many people who are integral to my growth, to success, to everything. It's totally different now because I realize I can ask for help. There is support there for me.
Right. So out of those people that you talk about as your support network, are there any that you would choose as your mentor? Or let me ask you a question. If you could choose your own mentor, who would it be?
I don't know. I was thinking. The people around me, young or old, I recognize now my life has been filled with mentors ever from the time I was a little girl. So I never felt lacking in that way because there was always somebody I admired or was looking towards for something. I suppose right now I'm really on a quest for me.
Right.
And to discover more of the things that are within me that I want to manifest. So I am looking more in than out for the answers.
Right.
And so if there's a mentor, it's Jesus Christ right now. I'm crying his name every day, asking him for directions. Because I recognize now where I want to go and the things I am seeing aren't necessarily things that somebody else can guide me with.
Right.
Because
right.
I am still in this very interesting space of my children still need me. They need me differently.
Yeah.
I am also very aware that there are things I must manifest and bring forth in this time. It's how do I, you know, how do you have that? Keep it going.
So you're trusting, in effect, you're trusting your inner mentor.
I am more than ever, more than ever, because I find the minute I step out trying to find that person out there, I usually get rebuffed. And I know that's a sign that you don't need the answers. The answers aren't out there.
Yeah.
It's time to just spend more time.
Look inward. So Narissa, you're a writer, but is there a book that has influenced you and your career? And what, you know, what is it and why?
I would have to say it's the Bible.
Okay.
Because again, not just because I grew up in church, but it's been a little over 20 years now since I kind of connected with God on my own for myself.
Right.
that made it real to me about why I loved him, why he was important to my life. So it's the book that I go back to whenever I need direction, whenever I just need peace. Because I have found that as I connect with the Holy Spirit, he gives me the wisdom I need.
Right.
And often when I go and read somebody else's book, it's just going to be a confirmation of what he's already told me. So for me, that's the original source.
Excellent.
You know, and I just need to do better at spending more time in it.
Okay. So what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
That I am tenacious.
Yeah.
That I love seeing other people succeed. And I'm brilliant.
You're brilliant. Shout it out loud. So four children, novelist, media strategist. What are the three key pieces of advice, you know, so you have for maintaining that work-life balance, making sure that you don't burn out or neglect the persons that are important to you?
Okay. I like to say that work-life balance is a myth.
Okay.
Because when you think about balance, you're thinking about
even,
something.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. There are days when you get up with your agenda set to do 10 things.
Yeah.
But then a sick child walks in the room that you've got to take to the hospital and other stuff. So that becomes the priority.
Yes.
So I've had to just, and it's why I love being an entrepreneur.
Right.
Because I can actually just move with that. There's nobody I need to call and say, hey, I can't come to work today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's being where I need to be in the time I need to be there.
Yeah,
it's why I love being in the media, and it's just always given me a very flexible world. Even before I had children,
yes,
I pictured the way I wanted my life,
right,
and the flexibility I wanted in it, and I have that.
Right.
So it's just always about being where I need to be in the time I need to be there. Yes, the children always think it's never enough sometimes, but I've learned to live with that. In fact, if I can get all the major moments, then I've done well.
Yeah.
And then there are days when I do have to give priority to work and to writing and things like that. And I do that.
Okay.
So it's not to try to think I have to stay on top of everything.
Yes.
To know that, okay, today that's just going to have to wait because the children need me more today or I need me more today.
Yeah,
so I'm closing the door and there will be no conversations for the next 2 hours because I just need that time.
And I think that's a very healthy approach to it, because like you say, when people talk about work-life balance, I think there's a 50-50 split, and they think every day we're going to be able to do something for this, something for that, but actually, you know, you have to break up the whole week or the month, that, you know, 90% of it you're going to have to do something to do with the kids, the job, the family, the house, and then you're going to get a little 10%, and it may be down the end of the month, but as long as you've eked out that little bit of self-care, put you first a little bit, because if you go down, everything else goes down. I think that's important.
Jay, I'm on a call. Can you give me a couple minutes? Yeah, I got a sick child home today.
So there you go. That's the balance.
Yeah.
So last couple of questions, Narissa. You talked about some success. What is your definition of success?
I had this conversation the other night with a young woman who had to relocate after the hurricanes.
Right.
And I just reminded her that in the space that she was in right now, her goal, she just had to keep her goals simple.
Yeah.
Because that's just where you are. You're in survival mode.
Yeah.
And so I said, success for you, and sometimes success for me, is did the lights stay on today? or could I reconnect? Did I have the money to reconnect the light bill?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I'm sorry. Sometimes it just got to be as simple as that versus, you know, wanting some big goal. So sometimes it's just being, did I accomplish what was on my my list? You know, are my kids feeling comfortable? Did I not disrespect, you know, other people? I try to keep it really simple. Mm-hmm. I am, however, trying to add some more goals to it.
right,
in terms of some bigger dreams, and reconnect with the things I used to love to do that I kind of let go because they weren't important at the time. Right. So I suppose if you asked me this in another year or so, my definition of success might be different. But I just try to make sure I get through the day knowing that I empowered somebody,
right,
and that my children are safe. Then I feel good.
Beautiful. And last, Nerissa, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
Do you know that's been one of my mantras? Your own hero. Why? Because let's go back to the romance thing.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s or before, the guy was always rescuing the girl.
Oh yes.
You know? And I love a good action hero. Don't get me wrong. And some days I still say, God, I really would love a hero to walk in, you know, and thought out some of the situations. But more often than not, it's me.
Yes.
I have to come up with the solution. I have to figure out how to just navigate through whatever the challenge is. So it's to believe that you are enough and you really do have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
And that it's, I think being your own hero means you have to choose to be your own hero every day.
Right.
And I think that's the tough part.
Yes.
Some days I'm better at it and I think I have it handled. There are other days I don't think I have what it takes to be anybody's hero, much less my own.
Yeah.
So it would be the willingness to just be consistent about showing up for me every single day in whatever way that I need to do that. Excellent. And to not lose hope, not lose faith.
Excellent, excellent. Now that was really my last question and I have absolutely loved our conversation this morning.
Yes.
We were keeping it real, kids and all.
Oh, that's the way to be.
Yeah. So Nerissa, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, want to get hold of your novels, how can they do that?
They can go to nerissagolden.com and there's a store there where you can buy the books, either in print or whatever e-device they prefer. And the website also has all the links to my blog, my Facebook page, Instagram. They can follow me on Instagram. I've got two accounts on Instagram. They could pick one. They're different. There's a professional one and then there's the silly me one. So I'm all around and I try to be very digitally social. Yes. Sometimes I'm not very physically social, but that's where they can find me, nerissagolden.com. And they can connect with me on every other space.
And I'll put all the links in the show notes as well if anybody didn't get hold of that. So that was that much ado. So that's to say thank you very much for being my guest today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I enjoyed the interview.
Thank you. I certainly did, Janice.
Thank you. That was a great conversation there with Nerissa, and I took away a few key points from that conversation. The first thing being that we really don't need anybody's permission to celebrate our victories, but we don't do it enough. So next time you do something really well or something you're really proud of, just take 5 minutes. Take some time to reflect to say, hey, you know, I did a good job there. That, you know, that was me. That was all down to me. And the other thing I took from there as well was that recognizing when we're allowing fear to stop us. I know certainly for myself, I've allowed fear to stop me taking certain actions. Maybe it's a fear of what other people think of me. It's a fear of whether I'll do a good job. It's a fear of whether I actually believe in myself. So that was a real poignant point for me. And it's one of the things I'm going to start picking up. Well, I will pick up in a future episode of Real Talk. So the next time you find yourself in that situation, take a couple of minutes just to stop and say, okay, I see that, but what is it I'm actually afraid of? What is the fear? What is stopping me from taking what can be a really positive move? Because I think there's times we stop ourselves from reaching for greatness or achieving greatness because of our inherent fear. But what we really need to do is just stop, take a minute and ask ourselves, what is it we're really afraid of? That'll be a topic I pick up in one of the episodes of the new addition to Phenomenal Woman podcast, Real Talk. I will look at the fear of not being good enough.
I'll also look at why we as women let fear of failure, for want of a better word, hold us back. So really do look out for that future episode. I'd also like to have your input as to what topics should be covered off in Real Talk. What stops you in your tracks? What would you love more advice and guidance on? Please feel free to contact me via janicesutherland.com or by the usual social media channels. I am Janice Sutherland on Facebook, or The Real Talkist on Twitter and Instagram.
Since recording this episode, registration for my confidence building program Warrior has now opened. If you'd like some support in gaining clarity, identifying your goals in life, the courage to pursue what you desire, and the confidence to live the life you deserve, head over to my webpage janicesutherland.com to register for the next intake. Better yet, if you register your interest before the 10th of March and mention that you heard of the Warrior program via the podcast, then I'll personally have a one-to-one Warrior session with you. It's not something I normally do, but I'm so excited to share, as I know what a difference it can make to your life. So head over to my website, janicesutherland.com. It won't cost you anything, but the benefit to your confidence will be priceless. Well, all that remains to be said, as ever, it's my pleasure to show up here every week and connect with like-minded women who want to live their life to its fullest and be empowered to take their career to the next level. I do hope you're inspired and enjoyed this edition of Phenomenal Woman. And if you like what you heard, please make sure you rate and review on iTunes, as that's how we get to share with all the phenomenal women that are out there. Also, make sure you share with all the phenomenal women that you know. You can connect with me via janicesutherland.com, and I'm on all social media platforms. So Facebook, it's I Am Janice Sutherland, and Twitter and Instagram, I'm The Real Talkist. Links are all in the show notes. So remember, you are the author of your own story. You control the narrative, and you have the power to give your life story a happy ending. So own it. Until next time.